Hey, it's John from the Commander's Brew. Thanks for listening. This time around, I've got a nice little podcast around Isshin, Two Heavens as One. I'm going to show you the thought process behind putting a deck like that together. And before I do, though, getting rid of the business up top, mullet style, and then we're going to party in the back. So business while. Are mullets back in? I'm seeing some mullets. Or is that just my region of Canada that's doing that? Anyway. Thanks for listening. Do appreciate it. Can't do this without you. If you would love to support the show in other ways, patreon.com/commandersbrew. That is the way to make sure this show keeps running and growing. Love that. Other ways are through our TCG player link. Buying cards through that gives us a little slice of the action. Heck, like and subscribe on YouTube is valuable. Passing us on to some friends is valuable. If you're a Canadian listener, we actually have the best deal for you, and that's money off your Magic singles through the Wizard's Tower. Let's hear an ad from them now. We're proud Canadian podcasters, and we're proud to be sponsored by one of Canada's premier card stores, the Wizard's Tower, wizardtower.com. Our Canadian listeners get an exclusive coupon code BREWNEO to get 5% off any order of singles shipped to you for free as long as you've ordered $20 or more in singles. And you can check out our decklist for this week's episode and other episodes we've done on their content site, mtgcanada.com. Remember raves? Look at the size of these pants. There we go, back from the ad. And there's something I've been thinking about brewing decks. You know, brewed a lot of decks, this is true. I've been doing a lot of thinking about how every decision kind of leads to other decisions. My philosophy is that I don't want to just have kind of a like a file, like a text file full of like, if you're blue, here are 10 cards you must run. If you are red, here are 10 cards you must run. I think you could do that. And I think that would be a pretty easy way to just whip up a bunch of generic decks. But that's the thing. They'd feel a little bit generic. You know me, I always want to dig a little deeper and I want to do the thing that a deck doesn't necessarily do on the surface. You know, I love seeing commanders with lots of options. I love seeing very open commanders that kind of present a ton of brewing possibilities. I think Isshin is one. I'll walk you through that deck tech in a minute, as I said. But I just want to kind of spend a second to chat about how that process is so fun. There's a certain point, I don't know if you brew this way, but there's a certain point where you just kind of have to stop. You have to decide that, okay, I think I'm done. Because if I keep letting certain cards inclusion make me add other cards, and then those cards make me add other cards. Eventually, you've got more than 100 cards. And I think we're all familiar with the old strategy of building a 200-card deck and then cutting it down. It's the old joke. How do you make a sculpture of an elephant? You take a huge block of stone and you chip away everything that doesn't look like elephant. And I suppose that means the analogy falls apart because I don't know what a deck is going to look like when I get started. So I love to brew this kind of way. I think it speaks to the philosophy of just really brainstorming. There's kind of at two ends of the spectrum, you've either got a solid idea where it's like, okay, coming into this deck, I want to do X, Y, Z, and I want all the cards that do that. The most efficient ones, the best ones, all the ones that are under $5. And that's great. And you're going to have your plan and you're going to kind of build up from there. But I do love going at the other end, just being like, well, here's the commander. What are all of the cards that refer to something? And then you start looking for patterns. You start looking for trends. And, you know, I like skipping past the most obvious ones. As I said, I'm going to go on a little bit of a tangent for a second and get you to think about Lego or puzzles. I don't know if you've done any Lego sets recently or any puzzles. Maybe puzzles have gotten pretty popular over the last couple of years. You know. So do you do puzzles? I'm talking about the like 100 pieces. I guess it's more than that. Those are children's puzzles. Like 500 pieces, 1,000 pieces. You take up the whole dining room table and, you know, you chip away at it a whole bunch of times. You just start end up putting blankets over it because it takes so long to finish. Here's where I'm going with it. Are you the type of person that looks at the cover first, you know, and you want to find out, you're like, okay, this piece has some blue, so I know it lives up here. Or do you just kind of wing it and you like to be a little bit surprised at the end and be like, oh yeah, I mean, I knew this was a bag full of sports balls, but I didn't quite memorize, like, if the basketball was to the left of the soccer ball, for example. It's just kind of nice to see what you've done and discover how it goes. You build the soccer ball and then you realize, oh, it connects over here. This is the feeling of brewing a cool commander deck, in my opinion. This is the feeling I go for. If you're not sure, like, I don't know the logic behind it, go for the feeling. The feeling is like, well, I like this little island of cards that does this sort of thing. Ooh, and I also like this island of cards that does this sort of thing. Well, and they intersect with these cards here. And if I swap out one or two, I can get more of an intersection that way. I just think that's so neat. And then at the end, you get to sit back and be like, there it is. There's the deck. There's the puzzle. There's the bag full of sports balls. I forgot that there was a badminton birdie in there. But I can still tell when it seems fun, you know? Like, I just know. I've got a good sense of what's fun. And I do think that this is a fun one. So what do you say we get into it? Let me walk you through the deck tech, but instead of giving you this deck, I'll teach you the deck. Okay, here's the deck tech. We're talking about Isshin, Two Heavens as One. Remember that Belinda Carlisle song, Heaven is a Place on Earth? So if two heavens are as one, that makes it Earth. So if it's Kamigawa and there's a song like that, but the two heavens are as one on Kamigawa. Anyway, I've probably thought about this way too much. It makes sense to me, even if it doesn't. But let's get into it. Who is Isshin? 3/4 human samurai for Mardu. Red, white, black. I love a 3-mana commander. You can cast him a couple of times in a game in case something happens. Here's the interesting part. If a creature attacking causes a triggered ability of a permanent you control to trigger, that ability triggers an additional time. So first place I want to go generally is like, what are we doing to ramp? And it just so happens that there are triggers for ramp surrounding treasures. So we're going to primarily ramp using treasures. And of course, Captain Lannery Storm, 2 red, legendary human pirate, haste 2/2. When Lannery Storm attacks, create a colorless treasure artifact token. We're actually going to create 2 with Isshin. And whenever we sack a treasure, Captain Lannery Storm gets +1/+0 until end of turn. Very nice. In a similar vein, Hoarding Ogre from Forgotten Realms, 3 red for an ogre. It's a 3/3. And whenever this ogre attacks, you roll a d20. With Isshin, we're going to do this twice. 1-9, treasure token. 10-19, 2 treasure tokens. Natural 20, 3 treasure tokens. We're going to at least get 2, but I think, you know, it's a very good chance we're going to get about 3. I think 3 is the average if with Isshin's out. And like, man, what are the chances of rolling 2 20s? I don't know what it is, but it's very high. But anyway, Hoarding Ogre, good for our ramp for sure. And there's a rare enchantment saga from Neon Dynasty. It's currently going for a gumball. It's Fable of the Mirror Breaker, 2 red. The first chapter is make a 2/2 red goblin shaman creature with, whenever this creature attacks, create a treasure token. It's like a little Lannery Storm without haste. And then the second chapter is you may discard 2 cards if you do draw that many. And the third one exiles it and turns it into Kiki-Jiki, basically. It's a 2/2, and you can pay 1 and tap. So you have to pay, so you can't do infinite like before. You pay 1 and tap to create a token that's a copy of another target non-legendary creature, except it has haste. That one really makes it so you can't do this infinitely. But still, we're not here for the infinite combo. We're here for the treasures. That's great. And even if we don't have treasures going, there's another great way to ramp with Isshin. No surprise it also came from the Neon Dynasty Commander set. This is Aerial Surveyor. 2 white for an artifact vehicle. It's a 3/4 with flying. It's crew 2. And whenever Aerial Surveyor attacks, if defending player controls more lands than you, search your library for a basic planes, put it onto the battlefield tapped, then shuffle. If you get a double trigger off this, each one will evaluate separately. So if you're only 1 land behind, the first trigger will get you a land, and the second trigger will see that you're not behind on lands. So it won't work necessarily, like it won't work double. But I mean, if we're only 1 land behind the player with the most lands, that's pretty good. But it seems very reasonable that we'll have someone to attack to get 2 basic planes into just by attacking. Love this card. So Isshin doubles the triggers on the permanents we control upon attacks. So I think the first idea you're going to have, the first idea I had as well, is like, what are the biggest, baddest attack triggers in Mardu colors? And, you know, there's a lot. I'm not going to debate which are the best ones. I'm not going to do a definitive Commander's Brew list on that subject at the moment. But I think you have to acknowledge Itali Primal Storm, 6-mana Elder Dinosaur, 6/6. And when it attacks, exile the top card of each player's library. Then you can cast any number of spells from them without paying their mana costs. Well, Ishin lets us do that, like double up on the spells we've exiled. So that's just a massive, massive turn. You know, a little bit more simple, but also very powerful. Grave Titan. It's a 6-mana giant with 6/6 and Death Touch. When it enters and when it attacks, you make 2/2 zombies, but we're going to make 4 of them when we attack. That's great. And then something like Ilharg the Raised Boar, 3 red, boar god, 6/6 with trample. And whenever Ilharg attacks, you may put a creature from your hand into the battlefield tapped and attacking. And at the end of the end step, you put it back in your hand. And when Ilharg dies, you can put it into your library third from the top. The attack trigger is sneak attack, and we get to double sneak attack things. And if we're already putting big beefy attackers in, we can just like slam a bunch of them down. Those new ones don't get attack triggers because they're already attacking, but they're beefy creatures nonetheless. But as I said, this is kind of the obvious way to do it. That's kind of the top level. And quite frankly, I'm not going to go that way. And firstly, I'm all about the less obvious deck choices. That's my favorite way to go. But I also think that, you know, if you put your whole game plan into a bunch of big creatures, that can be explosive, but we're very vulnerable to board wipes. And there's a little bit of subtlety to Ishin's ability because it triggers on any creature attacking, not just our creatures. So I think there's a way to get a real defensive Ishin deck going. Let's make him pay for attacking. How about something like Hissing Miasma? It's an enchantment, aka a permanent we control. 1BB. Whenever a creature attacks you, its controller loses 1 life. Well, that translates to 2 with Ishin. Revenge of Ravens for 4 mana, similar enchantment, but whenever a creature attacks you or a planeswalker you control, that creature's controller loses 1 life and you gain a life. That's double on either end there. Also, it's not just about losing life. So stuff like Search the Premises, 3W for an enchantment. Whenever a creature attacks you or a planeswalker you control, investigate. That means make a clue, but we're going to make double clues whenever a creature attacks us. So that's the potential for clues is enormous there. How about Curse of Shallow Graves, 2W for an enchantment or a curse, enchant a player. Whenever a player attacks enchanted player with 1 or more creature, the attacking player may put a 2/2 black zombie creature token onto the battlefield tapped. This will trigger twice, so I think everyone gets double zombies, but I'm okay with that, and I think you will be too. Trove of Temptation. Not an attack trigger, but each opponent must attack you or a planeswalker you control with at least 1 creature combat if able. It's a way to encourage your opponents to attack you. And it's not just an encouragement, they have to. So there's a way to get them to trigger all those effects, make them lose life, make us gain life, etc. In addition, in the beginning of your end step, you create a colorless treasure artifact token. That's our treasure ramp. We're leaning into that as well. So I think that works very nicely. Now, there's another enchantment that is another drain and gain type of thing. Well, no gain, but Marchesa's Decree, 3W. When it enters the battlefield, you become the monarch, and whenever a creature attacks you or a planeswalker you control, that creature's controller loses 1 life. They're going to lose 2, but I think, you know, we've already built a defensive kind of deck where we kind of want players to attack us, and we're going to punish them for it. So, of course, the monarch is the perfect mechanic for this. So let's lean into it. Let's run a ton of monarch cards and make our opponents have to make really tough decisions. So the Court series, Court of Grace, 2W enchantment. When it enters the battlefield, you become the monarch. And at the beginning of your upkeep, all these three in the court cycle, the black one, the white one, and the red one, they all have something that happens every turn, but they have something way better that happens if we're the monarch. So the white one, we become the monarch on ETB. That's true for all of them. If we're not the monarch, we make a 1/1 white spirit creature token. If we are, that we make a 4/4 white angel creature token with flying. Pretty good. Court of Ambition, the black one, 2 black. If we're not the monarch, each opponent loses 3 life unless they discard a card. If we are the monarch, each opponent loses 6 life unless they discard 2 cards. Pretty good. Court of Ire is the red one. Costs an extra mana. Costs 5. At the beginning of your upkeep, 2 damage to any target. Unless you're the monarch, then 7 damage to that player or permanent instead. That's 7 is a lot. If you're going to go face, your opponents are losing life by attacking you. You know, you have a couple of courts out and your opponents are in the position where like they have to attack you. And so they're going to have to lose more life and get more, give you more clues and all sorts of stuff. Very nice. We can leverage our monarchy. Like once the monarch's in play, you might lose it. We will lose it from time to time. We need to get it back by attacking, hitting with creatures. So Thorn of the Black Rose, 3 and a black, Death Touch, 1/3. When it enters, you become the monarch. Another way to become the monarch. And a 1/3 Death Touch is, you know, if they've got a board full of tokens, easy to block. Just throw away a token. But there's always some boards where like they can't necessarily block this without losing some real good stuff. Hopefully they're the one who stole the monarch from you. If not, how about Queen Marchesa? Remember her? 1 red, white, black, human assassin, death touch, haste, 3/3. When it enters, you become the monarch. And at the beginning of your upkeep, if you're not the monarch, you get to make a 1/1 black assassin with death touch and haste. That assassin is so good at getting back the monarch. The design of this card is amazing. And it used to be expensive. It's down to $4 thanks to secret packs. So amazing. I'm so glad we get to include this on a moderate budget as well. Now, this is the other cool thing too, because we've got a few death touchers. We've got ways to attack through maybe our huge angels. We don't necessarily have to actually get into combat to protect the monarchy. We've got a fair number of cards that grant us the monarchy, so we can just sandbag one of them. And if our opponent if an opponent takes it from us and we're like, yeah, it's going to be really hard to get it attack through to you, let's just cast another one of these cards and just get it back that way. So good. I want to highlight another neat move that does involve the commander. Does involve the monarchy. Bear with me 1 second. Magda, Brazen Outlaw. You might notice I didn't talk about her when I talked about Captain Lannery Storm. This is a 2-mana dwarf berserker, 2/1. Other dwarves get +1/+0. And whenever a dwarf you control becomes tapped, create a treasure token. See, I had it shortcutted that whenever Magda attacks, you get a treasure token. That's not true. This is not an attack trigger. This is just tapping. You're not going to get double treasures this way. However, I'll take 1 treasure. That's good. But also, Magda has the ability to sacrifice 5 treasures, search your library for an artifact or a dragon, put it into the battlefield, and then shuffle. Treasures is our main way to ramp. We're going to get 5 treasures. I can see turns where we already have 5 treasures, drop Magda, and then just crackle 5 treasures to go grab a dragon. Like, I don't know, Skyline Despot. 5 red for a dragon, flying 5/5. When it enters, you become the monarch. And at the beginning of your upkeep, if you are the monarch, create a 5/5 red dragon creature token with flying. Happens in your upkeep. The problem with Skyline Despot is your opponents see it coming. They're like, well, you cast it. We have to kill it before it gets back to you. And we have to make sure you're not the monarch. But with Magda, we can just do this at instant speed and have the Skyline Despot show up. Maybe for some reason we've not done any monarchy yet. Our opponents aren't even thinking about that. Boom, here's the Despot. We're the monarch. Upkeep, 5/5 red dragon. Now try to steal the monarchy from me. Ooh, I love it. I love it. There's another way to protect the monarchy too. What if our opponents just can't attack us because we've goaded them all? Martial Impetus is a card we're going to run. 2 and a white for an enchant creature. It's an aura. Enchanted creature gets +1/+1 and is goaded. And whenever enchanted creature attacks, each other creature that is attacking one of your opponents gets +1/+1 until end of turn. I love it. The The creature that the aura is on is permanently goaded, so they have to attack and never us. But also, they're encouraged to attack with more of their team. And that bonus, there's a lot of these, like, must attack type of cards, goad type of cards that, like, oh, you get to put counters on your thing. It's like, okay, I'll give you a couple counters, you're goaded. But there's going to come a point where they're like, well, now you're going to turn on me eventually. And now your creature is friggin' enormous. But with Martial Impetus, that +1/+1 to the team goes away at the end of turn. There's nothing like, well, they only get it if they're attacking an opponent anyway. It's great. Great card. Similar vein, same cycle, shiny Impetus, 2 and a red enchant creature, +2/+2 and goaded. And whenever an enchanted creature attacks, you create a treasure token. Not bad. Now, that's an attack trigger. Both of these are attack triggers. So with Ishin, for Martial Impetus, everyone gets +2/+2, and shiny Impetus gives us 2 treasure tokens. Very nice. And then just generally, it's not technically goad, it's not written that way, but Carter Doom Scourge, 2 black red, legendary demon berserker. When it enters until your next turn, everyone's goaded. And whenever an attacking creature dies, each opponent loses 1 life and you gain 1 life. It's not an attack trigger, so that one won't double, but still good goading. Protects the monarchy. And while we're manipulating combat, why don't we just run Fumiko of the Low Blood? 2 red red, human samurai, Bushido X, where X is the number of attacking creatures. Bushido X means whenever Fumiko blocks or becomes blocked, gets +X/+X. Also, creatures your opponents control attack each combat if able. Love this card, always have since the first time I cast it. Goblin Spymaster, 2 red. Goblin Rogue, 2 and a red, 3 mana value. Goblin Rogue, 2-1 for with a first strike. At the beginning of each opponent's end step, that player creates a 1-1 red goblin creature token with creatures you control attack each combat if able. Nice. It's getting pricey though. $8, pushing $9. It's one of the more expensive cards in the deck. Maybe we run it, maybe we don't. Remember I talked about that zombie curse before? Everyone gets double triggers and double zombies. We're creating a situation where attacking us is painful and we're doing a lot of goading. So I want to encourage giving more creatures to our opponents. I don't mind that. I also am avoiding running things that, like, whenever a creature attacks, it takes a damage. Those types of enchantments, because I don't want to kill all my opponent's creatures. I kind of want to make them keep paying for it over and over. You know what I mean? So I've chosen not to run a ton of those. And in that vein, Aganjo Uprising, X red white sorcery. It's a new one from Neon Dynasty. Create X22 white samurai creature tokens with vigilance. They gain menace and haste until end of turn. Each opponent creates X-1 2/2 white samurai creature tokens with vigilance. Ours gain menace and haste, and theirs just sitting there with vigilance. So it's kind of, they get one less as well. So it kind of, like, for every one we make, it takes 2 of theirs to block it. So it becomes a lot of free, like, a lot of our attacks just get through anyway. That's very nice. But also, we're giving our opponents a bunch of creatures. This is excellent if we've got enough mana to, like, goad everybody afterwards, or somehow make it so, like, create a situation where, like, it's not going to work out for them to attack us. Big fan of this card. Great way to give opponents creatures. And if we want to lean more into that, Alliance of Arms. Remember that single mana sorcery from the original Commander decks, which were from 2011. Commander decks have been out for 12 years. That's crazy. 11 years. This is a join forces sorcery. So for a single white, and then you join forces. So starting with you, each player may pay any amount of mana, and each player puts X-1/1 white soldier creature tokens, where X is the total amount of mana paid this way. So I go first, I'm going to pay 1 and 2, put 2 soldiers. But if my opponents want soldiers, they're going to add mana to it. Well, correction. This is why these cards are not great, because they will get my 2 soldiers. I've paid for 2 soldiers. Everyone's getting minimum 2 soldiers. They can choose to do nothing and get no more than that. And that might be the way they go, because if they know that having creatures is a liability here. But if they want to pay more, get more soldiers, then everyone benefits. I don't mind that. If you got a little bit more money, this is almost $10 now. Tempt with Vengeance, X and a red sorcery. Put X 1/1 red elemental creature tokens with haste onto the battlefield, and each opponent may also put the same amount of elementals with haste onto the battlefield. And each opponent who does, you get to put an additional batch in. So you'll always be ahead of the game, like a Ganjo Uprising. But here you can get just so many tokens. So many tokens. It's a good card. It's why it's $10. Here's what my brewing brain is doing right now. First of all, I'm so excited. This deck seems so fun so far. But also, I've named a ton of enchantments. Are we an Enchantress deck? Why not throw in Misa Enchantress? One white, human druid 02, cast an enchantment, draw a card. We've got enough curses and permanents that trigger. I mean, that's why there's so many enchantments. We got to run Gen, Arcanum Weaver, red, white, black, legendary human wizard, 2/3. You can pay Mardu, red, white, black, tap, sack an enchantment, return an enchantment from your graveyard to the battlefield. Very nice. And this card, Hallowed Haunting, it's another kind of expensive one. It's like it's getting up to $10. So, but it's 2 white enchantment. As long as you control 7 or more enchantments, creatures you control have flying and vigilance. Very nice. And when you cast an enchantment spell, create a white spirit cleric creature token with this creature's power and toughness are each equal to the number of spirits you control. Doesn't take long to get to 7 enchantments, so that's a lot of big flying and vigilant creatures. I do like this idea. Now, I did mention we're not running a ton of artifacts that like do damage upon attacking, with an exception, because it's really strong. Power Stone Minefield, 2 red white enchantment. Whenever a creature attacks or blocks, Power Stone Minefield deals 2 damage to it. And of course, we're going to take advantage of this by running cards like Tajik Legion's Edge. It's the 1 red white legendary human soldier with haste. It's got Mentor, but the key is prevent all non-combat damage that will be dealt to other creatures you control. Non-combat damage like from Power Stone Minefield. And I didn't mention it, but whenever a creature attacks, they're getting hit for 2 twice with Ishin out. So that's 4 damage. Our creatures will survive those attacks. Will your creatures survive those blocks? If we've goaded you, will your creatures survive the attack? Again, as I have already said, I don't have a ton of ways to just kill opposing attacking creatures, but I couldn't avoid this one. You know, it's a little bit of an escape hatch too, if the pressure builds too high. In addition, we've got another enchantment that does it. We're an Enchantress deck. Mark of Asylum, 1 and a white. Prevent all non-combat damage that will be dealt to creatures you control. It's Tajik's ability. We get the same thing from Blessed Sanctuary, that jumpstart enchantment. Prevent all non-combat damage be dealt to you and creatures you control, but also whenever a non-token creature enters the battlefield under your control, create a 2/2 white unicorn creature token. Nice. And of course, I'm not going deep on this, but we've got enough cards that say prevent all non-combat damage done to your creatures that it just makes sense to run something like a Blasphemous Act, 13 damage to each creature. Damage-based wraths are excellent in that with those cards. Now, you know me, I'm a big fan of like, well, we have these cards, so now that opens up these cards. And now that we've included these cards, we can add these cards. We're getting, the deck's full. We have to stop. But obviously, there would be a temptation to run now like way more cards that do like wrath damage, like damage-based wrath, so our creatures will always survive. Just full of one-sided wrath, indestructibility kind of things. But that deck's already out there. Like that deck exists, but this Ishin one, I want to keep it as is. A lot of goading, a lot of forced combat, a lot of defensive type of things. Super fun. And on my way out, as I'm wrapping up here, I want to just kind of highlight how, like, I'm not going to comment on what I think's going on or what's happened, but there's clearly pricing is an issue with this game. Like, if you're running, like, I'm just looking through cards, like, what are some good cards? Before I got into the defensive angle, I'm like, well, okay, you want to attack, right? We're a Boros deck. If you're a Boros millionaire, Like these, there's some all-star cards that are like $20 a piece. Gisela, Blade of Gold Knight. This is the angel that like doubles your damage and halves everyone else's damage. This card was reprinted, so it's down to like $10, but it's $10. Aurelia the War Leader doubles your combat step. That's a $25 card. Iroas, God of Victory. All your creatures are menace and don't take, if you're attacking, you don't take damage. Great in this deck. Great for how we're rolling, but like this is a $15 card as well. Like these effects are just so pricey. So, you know, I'm not going to comment. I'm just going to put that out there. If you want to run a successful Boros deck, you got to be a millionaire. These cards are very expensive. So anyway, that's the deck. I think it's really interesting. I do love it. It speaks to me. It's the deck that I think I kind of have a lot of fun with. Much more interesting than just huge heavy hitters that will become even heavier hitters. So I hope that was an interesting journey. I hope you learned a few things, and let me know how you would brew this deck. How would you play an Ishin deck? But before I close off, though, I must thank the Discord. Couldn't do this without you. Chiefy, Nosrak 2, Papadio, Groove Chicken, and Pips Don't Lie, even though you just woke up and missed most of this brew, came in right at the end, so thank you. I do appreciate it. Thanks, everybody. And thanks for being you. World's a better place for it. See you next time.